autism. I was just talking about, you would like to find out, to learn something, education, etc., you'll find it only in the schools or colleges. You would like to have medicine, go to a hospital. Similarly, you want anything, or if you want some warm clothing, then go to some cloth seller. If you would like to find out God, then go where? In the company of a true saint, of a master. What is master? Or a saint, word made flesh, who dwells amongst us. So there, when that God is there everywhere, master one word made flesh. Satsang is called the company of Sat. Sat is called unchangeable permanence. We never change that, you see, or ever existent. So, our soul, when it is divested of mind and matter and outgoing faculties, knows herself by self-analysis. That controlling power is already within us, controlling us in the body. Our God is also within each of us, but our souls are identified with the mind and outgoing faculties. So much so that we have forgotten ourselves and forgotten the over-self, God, which is keeping us in the body. So where such a soul is there, who has known itself by self-analysis, by rising above body consciousness, he is cognizant, he sees God as I see you and you see me. Such a person is called master, or a saint, truly saint. Wherever he sits, the radiation goes on. Radiation goes on through every pore of the body. But the place of manifestation, especially within through the eyes. Eyes are the windows of the soul. Soul is just intoxicated with the love of God, with God. If you look into his eyes, that radiation will be there. You see? So, how to derive the full benefit of a company of a saint? Yes, you must prepare yourself for that. And that preparation lies in what? When you come to a place where the master is sitting, you see, forget all the world over. Forget even the environment. Just forget who is sitting by you. Just be fully attentive into the eyes of the master, which is the place where the soul place, you see. So you must become receptive to derive full benefit of the company of a saint. Those who come near the master and their mind is, what you say, tossing about one place to another. All your ripples arising in the pond of mind. Therein you cannot dwell receptivity, as also you cannot receive the full benefit of the radiation which is going on through the whole body and through the eyes especially. So this benefit you can derive even while sitting thousands of miles through radio. You hear what a man is saying at this long distance too. Through television you also see who is speaking. If that is so, if the world is everywhere, word or nama, shabda, the same thing. So the man, where the world is manifest, the vibration radiation goes on through the whole world. Those who become receptive to that by stilling their mind and intellect, they derive full benefit. Kabir says, if the master is residing 1,000 beyond the seas, and the disciple is residing this side, just direct your attention that way. Become receptive. That word is everywhere. When you become receptive, you derive the full benefit of satsang. So, if you want to find God, go to a place where your master is sitting. By radiation you will have if you become receptive. There is nothing stands between you and the master. Not even the body. Whole attention absorbed into the eyes of the master, you will have full radiation and full, what you say, bliss-giving intoxication too. This is the quickest and the easiest way to derive full benefit of a company of the saints. So this was the subject we taught here. That's what he read. That is the substance of the whole talk. Then naturally when you become receptive, you get higher intoxication. The world is forgotten. We have more pleasure, more bliss into the beyond by becoming receptive as compared with the outside. We are conscious beings. When we become receptive or in contact with the world residing everywhere, you see, world and now. The outer expression of which is light and sound. The more you come in contact with that, you have more bliss, more intoxication as compared with anything outside. So there are so many. Mind becomes still. What is that Upanishad says, by having which you do not need anything more? That is coming in contact with the light and sound principle of the world made flesh. So the company of one where world is made flesh, it is called satsang. There you can find the radiation of God. There also, even at thousands of miles, if you become receptive. So that is why Maulana Rum says, you, if I have 20 minutes to sit by a saint, for 20 minutes only, the result of the benefit that you derive during that short period, thousands of years of penances, true penances too, cannot wipe that. Once you have fire is burning, you sit by it. When all the fire is made, you see, a blaze, how that is burned. It is quite great difference, you see, between the two. When world is manifested anywhere, you become receptive, your mind is still. When your mind is stilled, the only thing that retards our way between us and God is mind. If mind is still, you can reflect your own self in it. You can reflect God within you. You have not to put in anything from outside. It is already there by becoming the turbulent waves of the mind. You see, when those are still, you can see your face in it. You don't follow how to derive the full benefit from the company of a saint. So God is found not in books, that's only statements given, not in temples made with stones by the hand of man. There only we gather together to, I will praise God, thank Him for all what He has given. But He resides within you. Body is the temple of God. When you have understood that thing, then where to go to find Him? First, within your own self. Withdraw from outside. Withdraw from mind and outgoing faculty. Come to the back of the seat of the soul, behind the eyes. There is your... When you concentrate there, then you just open your inner eye to see the God also within you. But where it is manifest already, that radiates by sitting by Him even for a short period, that will give you quicker results. That is why the satsang, the company of saints, is talked of very highly in all scriptures. So this is how we should, how we can find out God quicker by radiation. It is already within you, that is awakening. Given a boost. That is why it is said, if one lyrical glances of a saint that raises your soul from outside and brings you up into your own self and see the light of God within you. That's all. So one grace pouring love or glance from a master is sufficient for us. You see, that will give a boost. That is the meaning what is meant by have company of a saint. The more you get, the better. The more you get receptive by sitting by Him, the more you can derive more benefit. Simply come and go, that won't do. It is receptivity that gives you very, substantial. The more time that you can get in the company of the saint, the better. But even if you are not in the direct company of the saint, you can develop receptivity by sitting in your rooms, even at far off places, by developing receptivity. Yes. That receptivity comes only when everything is taken away between you and the master. So maybe it's thousands of miles. Telephone message is received, you see, from thousands of miles we hear. Right? This is what is meant by receptivity. Then nothing stands between you and the master. Not the worldly things, not even your body, you see, not even your mind, simply receptivity. That would work that way. We cannot underrate the value of direct company with the master. The more you become receptive, the more benefit you can draw. Even at a far off place, you can dwell receptivity. When you dwell receptivity only, then you will be able to derive more benefit from distant places. When you direct your face to face, so naturally that gives you power. When you dwell receptivity, then for thousands of miles you can have it. The same benefit. You follow those people who apply for initiation. I simply sanction. All right, give me sitting. The man through whom that gives you sitting, you see, he gives the same experience as in direct contact. So that is through the shabda, that word, see? That word, that is everywhere. So I think you will appreciate that you can derive more benefit by becoming receptive, even if you are here. The more you can have time, direct contact, so much better. If not, because it is not possible to 24 hours of the day, but whatever time you get the better, then dwell that 71 sitting in your rooms. That is dwell that you can go anywhere. The world, you see, is pervading everywhere. What makes such one thing, when that vibrates, that vibrates through the universe. Only it becomes a question of becoming receptive, that's all. So that makes no difference whether a man is sitting near or far off. That's a matter of only becoming attentive, receptive to the word or shabda which provides everywhere. Where it is manifest, that vibration, that vibration goes on through the world. That's, you know what is master now? Only such like masters are eulogized, I would say, in all scriptures. Satsang kisko kahte hai, jahan ko anubhavi pas baitha. आलमोती सोबत का नाम सत्संग नहीं, और वो भी जो रेडिएशन होती है रिसेप्टिव होने से होगी, जब तुम्हारे उसके दरमियान कोई न रहे, जिस्म का ख्याल भी न रहे, आंखें, ये आंखें हैं ढोलघर की समझी गई, जैसे वो परमात्मा जिन आंखों में जिस रूप है इंटॉक्सिकेटेड है, उसका रेडिएशन डायरेक्ट होता तुम्हारे जोर से मथा जो जीते जब ऊपर देखो इस तरह से आप पूरा फायदा उठा सकते हो. 7 करोड़ भजन घर में जा बैठो, वही फायदा घर में भी आप उठा सकते हो. सिर मुंह उधर करो, आपके उसके दरमियान कोई न रहे. वो जो वहां वाइब्रेशन वो तुम्हारे अंदर भी है, वहां वाइब्रेशन मुंह करने का सवाल है और कोई बात नहीं. ये थोड़ी सी बातें जो आपको प्रैक्टिकली पेश की जाती है, जो किताबों में खोल कर नहीं बयान होती, नहीं तो होती है, बेसिक चीज वही है, पर इज नॉट सो वेरी क्लियर जैसे कि आप याद की जाते. आई जस्ट टॉकिंग अबाउट लव, दिस वर्ड लव वी हियर फ्रॉम एवरीबॉडी, बट व्हाट इज लव? God is love. Our soul is of the same essence as that of God. We are also love personified. Love is innate in our souls. It radiates. It should have come in contact with the over-self, which is called God, Paramatma. This has overflowed further, boost it would have got, and overflowed with love. Instead of contacting our soul with God, you see, we are contacting our soul with you. Soul and soul bodies. You see? When you attach to the body, that is called as attachment. Love is one which just overflows within you and you forget yourself. This is a criterion to differentiate love from attachment. This love is spoken of in scriptures. So as a rule, our soul should love God. God resides in every heart. That's the controlling power. If it is liberated from mind, matter, and outgoing faculties, this will go up to the very source from which it has emanated. Light a candle, the flame will go up. Even you upturn it, even then the flame will go up. Soul, love of the soul will go up to the oversight. It, if it remains attached with the body in outgoing faculties, that is no love, that is attachment. That is the difference between the two. To love God, whom you have not seen, is not possible. Unless you go up to that level. So while remaining in the body, you would like to love God, then what you have to do? You must rise above body consciousness or come in contact with where? To somebody in whom that God power is manifest, whose soul overflows with love and intoxication. You know? That will never always look into the eyes of the Master. Eyes are the windows of the soul. In whatever color it is imbued, our soul is imbued, that very radiation will affect us. If the soul is imbued with the love and intoxication of God, it will just become receptive to His soul through His eyes. Then you will have boost. You forget your body. If the love keeps you in the body, attached to the body, that is no love, that is called attachment. That is very fine difference, you see, between the two. We speak of love everywhere. To love God, well, soul is of the same essence, a drop of the ocean of all consciousness, that is that in every heart. We are all brothers and sisters in God. That very controlling power resides in every heart. If you look from that level, then there is no attachment. You are just hearing about one instance where Moses, God met Moses and told him, look here, I was very bent down with fever and I was very sick, lying in bed, and you did not care for me. He said, God, how can you be sick? Yes, I was sick. You see, where? Because that man, who loved me, you never went to just serve him and ask his wife and wherefore. So had you loved him, you would have done service to him. Love knows service and sacrifice. Then I would have been served, really. Twice is right in every heart, you see. Now you find we have love, what we call love, but it's no love, it is attachment. For one reason or the other, maybe the outer some purposes, selfish motives in view, or for the outer outgoing faculties should drag you, others are dragged to yourself and keep you in the body. That's a very fine difference in speaking about attachment and love. When you love God can have a boost, you see, overflows by coming in contact with the soul of somebody who is imbued with the love of God. That love will drag you up. You'll forget your body, you see, and environment. They're saying, the Master saying, they say, when I see the Master, you see, I become, what you say, no intellect. I forget all intellect, all outward cognition, all body and environment when they look at him. You see, that is love. Any love which you call love and keeps you in the body, that is no love, that is attachment. The love which, when you look into the eyes, and somebody that drags you up into the soul, and you forget your body, that is the criterion of what love is, you see. So that is why I always advise, don't look into the eyes of others. That's the way on which this lust attacks us, you see. We are attacked by lust through eyes. If you look to the eyes of others who are just imbued with lust or other lower things, you will have the same effect, radiation. Always look to the feet of everybody. Only manifest your God in men where you look into it. You will get better. I mean, just lift. Otherwise, you will go down. I remember an instance in the life of Ramayana, Lord Rama. Sita was abducted by Ravana. So on the way, her arm fell down on the ground. So Rama went in search of his bride. On the way, he found some ornaments. And his younger brother was there, Lakshman, called Lakshman. He told him, "Would you recognize these are the ornaments of your sister-in-law, your elder brother's wife?" "No, that I don't know. I only can recognize the ornaments which are worn on the feet of my wife, not on the head. Just see the highest criterion of morality. He could recognize only the ornaments which the wife of Rama, Sita, wore on the feet, not on the head. From these we can just draw some lesson, you see. Always look to the feet of others. You will never be attacked by lower impulses. If at all you have to look to the eyes of the Master who is imbued with the love of God. You stop. Otherwise, you will go down. And the only criterion is there, as I told you. If you look into the eyes, forget your body and everything, that is life. If you are attached to the body, maybe as the Master or anybody, you are going down. The danger of going down. If the other body is strong, then you can be saved. Otherwise, he will have to do it. I'm giving you a very fine difference, which is not given in books. And most of us, what you say, we have read from the right goal. So love is within you. When it is concentrated, then love overflows. When it comes in contact with the old self, God, it still further overflows. Just like there's a pipe, in which there are so many holes, and the water is flowing through the pipe. Drop by drop, it falls out through those holes. If you close all the holes and let remain one open, then the water will shoot forth from that hole. See? So our soul is now, you see, under the control of mind. It is our soul, our love is distributed in so many ways. In our body, to our children, to our money, your name is pain. So if you withdraw your attention from all outside things and direct only one way out, the door lying at the back of the eyes, which is called the tenth door, or come in contact by concentration with the soul of somebody which is imbued with the love of God, you will have a boost. So this is what is love. You can always use this criterion, how you find yourself. Love of God, He resides in every heart. In a sense, if they are already in the controlling power, then love for all humanity. For the sake of that love is no attachment, you see. You are always free. By looking at the faces of others, you will go up, forget the world. Now when you look at others, you are attached there. That is no love.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. This morning our reader is Christine Clevenger. Are you there, Christine?
Yes, I'm here, John.
Okay, carry on.
All right. I apologize. I'm hearing static on the phone. I hope it doesn't mar the hearing, your hearing of this reading. I'm going to continue reading from The Riddle of Life, a talk given in Hindi at Sawan Ashram. Without a guru, one can never come by God knowledge. All the sages, Brahma, Narad, and Ved Vyas, do testify so. In the Srimad Bhagavad, it is stated that even the authors of the Vedas were not satisfied with their great achievement. Even Sukhdev, the son of the illustrious Ved Vyas, who is said to have acquired God knowledge in his mother's womb, could not gain the kingdom of God without proper initiation from a God-man, and had to be directed by his father to Raja Janak, the then living master soul. You cannot have an out-of-mind experience without a God-man to help you. He does not give you anything from without. All that he does is to stabilize your mind for the time being. The mind thus still begins to reflect the light of God in you. In fact, the power of God is ever anxious to embrace all the children of light as we are. But we in our ignorance ever prefer to remain in darkness. The light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehendeth it not. The Guru, as the name indicates, makes us see the light in the enshrouding darkness, and then this experience can be developed by daily practice. Nanak has given a forthright decision in this respect, and he says, without a God-man, none has reached God, and not one has done so through the ages. Now we have to see what is real knowledge. It is something apart from knowledge that the books impart. The scriptures define true knowledge as the sound current that makes the unmanifest manifest. So our very life depends on the sound current ever reverberating in us and calling us back home. This is the only real thing in the world, and all else is unreal. A knowledge of it gives us not only cosmic knowledge, but knowledge of the beyond. Hence it is called Udgit, or music of the spheres. It is a vibratory force that produces its own symphony, and is therefore called Nad. To come into contact with this life force is the only real knowledge and food for the soul, or mana coming down from heaven. The rest is all empirical knowledge that we experience on the level of the senses and is vague, uncertain, undependable, and illusory. The intellect only helps us in the material world, but fails, and fails badly in the immaterial or spiritual world. And since these two worlds are poles apart, we have of necessity to transcend all that is human in us, including the mind and the intellect. It is only then, and then alone, that the unmanifested spirit and power of God becomes manifest through the grace of the master soul. The scriptures define a master soul as one who brings down the ethereal music to us at a superconscious level. This is what Paltu Sahib says about his guru. It is the master who opens the single eye and unstops the inner faculty of hearing. How sad it is that you live by the two life currents, light and sound of God, but are wholly unaware of them by being too much with the world. A disciple of the master cannot but pray for the gift of the light emanating from the master power. This is an eternal prayer even after one gets settled in that light. And at this stage, it comes more or less as a tribute to the munificence of the master, as we have in the Gurbani, when the guru himself prays to his master for the continuance of that bounteous light. So what is required is that we should get that light manifested within us. Swamiji also refers to the light of the sun within and exhorts us to make it manifest. Even the Gayatri Mantra, the root mantra of the Vedas, refers to the light of God, as would be clear from the word Savitur, the all-absorbing light towards which one is to fix his attention so as to be drawn by it. Again, we come to the initial problem as to who can give us a first-hand experience of that light. Only he who has himself experience of it and is competent enough to give us a similar experience. In fact, the real master is Jyoti Swarup and Sruti Swarup, and guides us to himself within after having elucidated everything on the physical level. We have therefore to search for a master of such a caliber, gifted with the capacity to pull us upward from the plane of the senses, the physical being in which we are so much engrossed all the time. We are completely lost to ourselves, each one of us, whether young or old. We do not know what we are and who we are beyond knowing the name arbitrarily given to our physical mold by our parents at the time of birth. Nanak goes on to explain, what if hundreds of moons and thousands of suns rise in the sky? For all this radiant light cannot dispel the inner darkness. Upon closing our eyes, we are in complete darkness within us. How can this bewildering darkness be dispelled? The outer light cannot help, but every cloud, however dark and thick it may be, has a silver lining because of the sun behind it. The dark clouds may come and go, but the sun is there all the time. We have, therefore, to develop the faculty to see the sun by piercing through the veil of darkness. All this is to be attained and accomplished by the inner eye that the master alone can develop. This is called third eye or single eye. This light of the self in us becomes manifest if we are able to control our mind and senses. Guru Nanak tells us, one who can control his 10 senses is sure to see the light of heaven. We have to go beyond the plane of senses that gives us knowledge of the material world. So far, so good, because with the help of the senses, we have to work in the workaday world. The transcendental knowledge comes only by transcending the senses. Where the world philosophies end, their religion starts. By religion, we mean not any of the man-made religions, but the religion or knowledge that binds the soul and leads it back to its source. The experience in transcension is given by the master at the time of initiation. It is the master who gives the experience of inversion. It is from him that we learn how to gather in our outgoing faculties, collect them at one center, the eye focus, and then turn them inwards, so much so that the inner eye begins to see the light of heaven. This mystery can be solved only when one learns to die while living. It is a process akin to death. Those who are initiated into the mysteries of the beyond have to pass through a process similar to that of death. As we transcend the bodily sensations, we leave the physical world behind and get an out-of-mind experience of the astral world at its lowest level. We are, in a sense, transported from one plane to another with vast vistas opening into the unknown beyond. This is an intuitive experience quite distinct from the sensual ones. As one grows from level to level on the planes, one outstrips all nightmarish shadows of the astral and mental worlds. Here the self stands as the self, capital S, in its own effulgence, more than 16 suns in the outer world if put together. Now one sees and realizes that everything is being done by the invisible hand of God, and that he himself is but a mere instrument in his hands. Guru Nanak, speaking of himself, informed Bhai Lalo by saying, "I open my mouth just to say what comes to me from behind." To gain knowledge of the sound principle is real knowledge. It is not storytelling from the epics, or lecturing from the pulpits, or singing psalms in praise of God, all of which can hardly be called satsang. It is the vijnana and contemplation of the word that give contact with the unmanifest. Blessed indeed is the outspreading fragrant tree that gives sheltering shade from the scorching sun. The master is likened to a great banyan tree with thick foliage, under which travelers from far and near come to take shelter from sun and rain. Maulana Rumi, a great Persian mystic, says, "Sit thou near one who knows how to control the mind. Sit under the tree that is laden with flowers and fruits. Do not go about visiting shops with big signs. It will pay thee only to go where thou cannot get honey, where thou can get honey. Extend not thy bowl at seeing a cauldron on fire, for the cauldron may contain something obnoxious." This is a warning from the great divine against the so-called teachers and preachers. We see black marketing and money-making all around us these days, but in religious matters it is even greater than what we see in ordinary human affairs. Religion, like any other thing, has become marketable. When Christ saw money changers doing business in the synagogues, he exclaimed, "Be ye out of the temple of my Father, which ye have converted into a robber's den." Similarly, Bulleh Shah could not help raising a voice against cheats and swindlers who were corrupting the sanctity of temples and shrines, mosques, and other religious places, which he said were not fit places for the lovers of God. It is really a pity that our socio-religious places have come down to a very low level. Instead of being presided over by awakened souls, they are being run by poor preachers, paid preachers on a paltry pittance. They are working for their belly's sake, and know not how to feed the hungry sheep that look up to them for spiritual food. Those who pay the piper have a right to the tune. The noble edifices raised with the best of motives are being used for collecting donations in one way or another. The credulous people fall an easy prey to the machinations and maneuvering of unscrupulous pundits and purists, and are satisfied with mere prostrations before the idols and getting in return a mark of saffron on their forehead. All this we take in good faith without any intrinsic merit in it. My master, Babasawan Singh Ji Maharaj, used to say, "I have given you something genuine and of sterling value. You may go the world over and try wheresoever you may for anything better than this. If you find something superior, accept it by all means and tell me also, and I would be glad to follow suit. This is plain speaking, and who can do so? Only one who is not dependent for his living on anybody else. A guru has spiritual riches of his own and is not in need of any worldly wealth. People tossed by the turns of fortune would come to him in despair, narrate their tales of woe. But in a few moments, the healing words of the master would soothe their ruffled nerves, and they would gain courage and depart. This is the difference between meeting a real God-man and a common priest. A sadhu has a healing touch for all and sundry. His kindly words serve as a balm to the lacerated hearts. In his company, one feels as if he is in close proximity with God. But the moment we depart and go out of his personal aura, we become the same as before. Guru from the rich store of God's name injects us with the love of the Lord. He has with him a fund of spiritual riches and shares the same with us. The result is that we begin to acquire a love for the God power that shines forth through him. This is the power that is responsible for the entire creation. The world is nothing but a manifestation of that power. This manifested power is known as Nam in the terminology of saints. Nam is not a word, but the controlling power that is keeping everything in its proper place. It is the name of the nameless. The rishis, munis, and mahatmas called this power variously as Ram, Allah, Wahiguru, or God. These are mere word names, while Nam is something original and primordial, free from all attributes. This is a heritage of the saints, in whom it works in fullness. And it is he who can give a contact to us. The word name you can have from anywhere, and you may go on repeating the same all your life, but that would not be enough. These word names, too, have a value, and it is better to do something than not to do anything. We have a respect even for the word names of God, because they signify something, some attribute of the attributeless. O God, we worship thee in all thy names. Again, the question arises as to what name is most proficient and most effective in leading us to the God power. What name in the world is worthy of being contemplated and would enable us to ferry across the sea of life? The real name, as said before, is the Nam power that comes as a gift from the God-man. The very knowledge of this subject only comes from him. Without the master soul, we cannot contact Nam and attain salvation. Where do we get contact with the Nam power is the next question. The Nam is the precious waters of life. The fountain of the life-giving water lies within the body. The saving lifelines are not to come from anywhere without. These are already in the body, sustaining and enlivening us as they are doing so in many solar systems in the vast universe. Now the question is, where is it in the bodily mold? It is said the Nam is invisible, ineffable as being, incomprehensible. but it may be said that it has an immense loving sweetness in it. This attractive nam is more than candy sweet. We cannot have an approach to nam by our own unaided efforts. By mere repetition of Vedic formulas and formularies, yajnas and pilgrimages, fasts and vigils, and performances of rites and rituals, we cannot have a contact with nam. Our social teachers, who also aim at inculcating the love of God among their followers, have not been able even to make us love one another. With all their best efforts based on scriptural knowledge, they cannot deliver us the goods except in the form of raising our emotions and feelings for the time being. They themselves are groping in the dark and cannot take us out of the darkness. When the leaders of various faiths and creeds are quarreling amongst themselves, they cannot give us a lesson in universal love and social well-being. These are the very persons who become the worst enemies of the awakened souls. It was the Jewish priestcraft that sent Jesus to the cross and called Guru Nanak and Socrates perverted beings. You can see for yourself what evil names they give to a God-man. Nanak therefore says, the meditation of the true name comes to the fortunate few. The scriptures have their value, but not much. A God-man simply and directly leads you to the God-power, and contact once established does everything to progress Godward. Without the word, we are hopelessly and helplessly moving up and down in the giant wheel of life. It is said, the fearsome sea of life is limitless, with no holds to hold on, with no boat and no boatman to steer. We endless float on and on. In such a situation, we have no other aids except of the chit, manas, intellect, and our personal ego. And these are the very things that keep us away from the saving lifelines and help us to drift indefinitely. Is there then no other remedy? We do have one. The word is the ship, and the word personified is the captain, who may, if he likes, take us across. Nam, then, is the only means whereby we can have a safe landing on the other side. In the Ramayana, the greatness of Nam is stated thus. The impersonal and the personal are the two forms of Brahman. But above them both is the Nam, as I understand it. How long can one describe the greatness of Nam? Even Lord Rama cannot sing adequately the value of Nam. The famous author of the Ramayana has drawn a sharp distinction between Lord Rama and Ram Narain, the all-pervading power. In the same strain, Nanak has said, O Nanak, one may read all the books of the world with devotion. One may write of his greatness with the speeding of the rushing wind. And with all this, none can do any justice to his greatness. Name, after all, is the name of God, the first and foremost manifestation of the nameless. All of us are repeating his name, one or the other, but none knows the name, as none has found his way to Nam. All are ignorant of the significance of this Nam. The name is something very subtle. It is the vibratory sound force of truth and can neither be written nor spoken of in so many words. It can be contacted by the grace of a God-man. The Guru or God-man is called in the scriptures as Satcha Padsha. And why? Because he has with him true riches which are eternal and not subject to decay as worldly riches are. A momentary severance from the word brings in untold sufferings and a goodbye to happiness. This is what Guru Nanak feels like all others who are in constant communion with the word. And this, too, is the fate of all of us at all times. Why are we eternally miserable? Simply because we have not established any contact whatsoever with the name of God, His power, and Spirit. O Nanak, the entire world is in the throes of sorrows and sufferings. He alone is happy who is established in His holy name. The Spirit of Truth is our very life. We have never known it and much less contacted it. We are far away from it, drifting along the current of time downward and outward. And the result, all misery and all sorrow. Swamiji Maharaj also gives the same explanation for all our troubles. As he says, I know thou art in extreme tribulation. Ever since thou turned away from the sound current and sold thyself to mind and matter. Nanak goes on to explain by saying, the tongue that delights not in gratitude to the name has no right to exist. He even goes to the extent of saying that an ungrateful tongue need be severed and cut into pieces. To forget the benefits coming down from God through that godly power is criminally heinous. When we are living by the Spirit and power of God in us, we must one time or the other turn our attention to the very life impulse that is sustaining and upholding us. Instead of this, we are going the other way around. We are enamored by the gifts of God and have forgotten God, and the wonder is that we are unaware of what we are doing. We have to leave the world. We have been respited for a while and have been bought with a ransom. We must be thankful to Him for the human birth given to us. The realization of this truth is the be-all and end-all of human existence. If we do realize it, it will be well and good. If we do not, then the purpose of life is wasted. The physical body is subject to decay and death, and when death comes, we rue. As we sow, so do we reap. All our good and bad actions keep us in eternal bondage. Once we rise above the plane of the senses, we get in touch with the power of God. And then all of our wandering ends. This is a path that leads upwards, and our senses cannot help us to gain it. It is a pure presentation from the spiritual treasures of the Guru. King Janak got it from Ashtavakra, and Sukhdev Swami from King Janak. One was a king who got these riches from a poor recluse, and the other a born hermit and son of a sage, Ved Vyas, who had the good fortune to come by this spiritual wealth from a mighty king, Janak. So it does not matter whether a God-man lives in a forest hut or in a royal palace, but he must be a God-man and not pose as such. It is all a gift of the perfect Master, and without him, we can have no access to spirituality in the true sense of the word. I will close by reading stanzas 9, 10, and 11 from the Japji. By communion with the Word, one can attain the powers of Shiva, Brahma, and Indra. By communion with the Word, one can win esteem from all, irrespective of one's past. By communion with the Word, one can have yogic insight with the mysteries of life and self all revealed. By communion with the Word, one can acquire the true import of the Shastras, Smritis, and Vedas. O Nanak, his devotees live in perpetual ecstasy, for the word washes away all sin and sorrow. By communion with the word, one becomes the abode of truth, contentment, and true knowledge. By communion with the word, one gets the fruit of ablution at 68 pilgrimages. By communion with the word, one wins the honor of the learned. By communion with the Word, one attains the state of Sahaj. O Nanak, his devotees live in perpetual ecstasy, for the Word washes away all sin and sorrow. By communion with the Word, one becomes the abode of all virtues. By communion with the Word, one becomes a sheikh, a peer, and a true spiritual king. By communion with the Word, the spiritually blind find their way to realization. By communion with the Word, one crosses beyond the limitless ocean of illusionary matter. O Nanak, his devotees live in perpetual ecstasy, for the word washes away all sin and sorrow. And I will stop there. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, Christine, for the wonderful reading. Excuse me a minute, I'll do a count. So today there were 67 people at the satsang. Thank you everybody for attending. And thank you, Master, for providing the satsang for us. Now please hang up your phone.